Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Of 1 through 8, I want you to give me 3 random numbers.
And it can't be 666.
I mean, that would be really appropriate, but...
6, 2, and 4.
The first one is audition high and low. Can you give me one audition high? But then I also want to know one audition low you experienced and what you learned from it that you could apply to future auditions.
Absolutely. I have many more lows than I do highs. I promise you that. I sometimes really get it wrong. So I will tell you. A high, I know it's quite cringe, but it was definitely this audition for this movie. Me and Akasha both cried our eyes out. So it was just like a beautiful moment together. It was really, really lovely. And it felt really special. I was like, even if I don't get the part in this movie, like I hung up from the Zoom, I was like, that was an amazing experience. So yeah, that's definitely a high. And then a low, I walked into an audition once and it was like kind of a, like after COVID, but like long enough after COVID that people were still making like physical contact with each other. It's like a year after. And I walked in and I walked up to, there's like a panel, there's like 8 of them sat down and I like walked in and I was like, nice to meet you, I'm Nell. And I like went to shake their hand and they were like, oh God, don't touch us, don't touch us. And I just was like, okay, but I was so embarrassed that, you know, when like tears spring up in your eyes and you're like, I don't know how to. So I just like forgot all of my lines after that, was just shaking. And it was like, just let me leave. And I just left and cried because I just knew I tanked it, completely tanked it.
It's like the bump your head effect when you're stressed. And like, you don't even bump it that hard, but because you're stressed, like the tears immediately well up because you did it all.
Exactly. I was just so embarrassed. There was like 10 people in the room. I was like, oh God, get me out of it.
I want to follow up on the high briefly. So you said that during your audition with Akasha for this, you both kind of left with tears in your eyes. What sparked those tears during that first meeting?
Not tears in our eyes. We were sobbing. We were full blown sobbing. I think like the subject matter of the scene that I was auditioning with was really a really, really intense scene. It was like, there wasn't even that much written down. It was kind of, she kind of just like talked me into what she wanted to see. And so we did it. And afterwards, it was just a really overwhelming moment because it was like really, really intense, the scene. And I think it had been like a long process for both of us. Like, and afterwards, I looked up and I saw that she was crying. And it made me cry because I was so happy that she was crying. And it was like, we just had this like beautiful little like soul connection. And yeah, and we've continued to keep that up. I mean, every time we do anything together, we both start crying. We just have a lot of love. We have a lot of feelings.
I feel like when you're making a movie like The First Omen, you need all those good vibes and those happy tears. I'm definitely coming back to working with Akasha because she's someone in this industry that makes me really excited that her like voice in it is getting louder and louder. And I want to see more from her. This is an acting specific one. It's favorite, least favorite. I want to know your favorite part of the acting process, like seeing the set, doing rehearsals. But then I also want to know, not necessarily your least favorite, but a part of the process where you still see room to grow for yourself and you're excited to tackle it.
I mean, I can tell you my least favorite very easily. Inserts are my least favorite thing to do because you spend like 6 hours just like putting things, picking things up and putting them down. It's like, move your arm to the left, a little bit higher, a little bit lower. And it's just like, you find yourself, your brain turning to porridge or oatmeal, as you guys say. So that's definitely my least favorite part of my job. My favorite part genuinely is like becoming like completely immersed in a totally different world. And it's like playing dress up, but for adults and as your job. It's just so fun being able to step into these. Like, I got to spend 4 months basically living in Rome in the 1970s, making this movie, you know, and we'd walk out of the car and you were in Rome and you were transported back to the early 70s. And there's just no other, there's no other job really where you get to experience stuff like that, you know? And it's not even just from an acting perspective. Anybody who's in this industry and works on a film set gets to experience all of these things. So yeah, I think that for me, but I guess that wasn't really specific to acting, but like the experience of being an actor, I guess.
No, that's a very valid answer there. And I kind of love and appreciate how that feeling for you then for us translates to us being fully immersed in a world that either like exists and we can't experience for whatever reason, or like maybe is a completely out of this world scenario that we then get to step into and be enveloped in. So continues on and on, and I appreciate it. Your last one here is the silly one. This one is, would you rather? Would you rather have to fake sneeze or fake vomit in a scene?
I've had to do both. And fake sneezing is harder. It really, really is. Fake vomit, at least like you've got some sort of like apparatus, or you got a cup filled with oatmeal that you can like spew out. But it's hard to fake a sneeze. It is. You should try it. It's really hard. It's like faking a hiccup. So you can just tell.
That's another one.
So faking a yawn, weird thing. But sometimes it will bring up a real yawn, which is obviously the pinnacle of acting talent.
of all of like the seemingly like silly everyday things human beings do, what would you say is the most difficult to replicate? Whether it's like, you know, like I always think of like waking up or fake driving or something like that.
I won't name names, but somebody once told me that they spent 6 weeks in acting class and like 2 of those weeks were dedicated to falling asleep and waking up convincingly, like something like that. Like, it's really, it's something people study. For that one, I've never really found that. I've always just sort of opened my eyes or closed them. I just kind of went with it. I tend to actually fall asleep sometimes at work when I'm pretending to sleep. So it's, you know, sometimes I really am sleeping. But all of the everyday things to do, mine is quite specific, but it's just for me because I have an affliction, and it's walking in a straight line. So, right, so a lot of the time on set, you've got to get from one mark to another, and you've got to go straight in between the two. And you'd think that'd be a fairly simple task, but for me, I find it really difficult because I'm like chronically pigeon-toed. My family always try and spot it in like any movies or anything I do. Like that, now we can tell it's Nell because she's walking like this.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back for a brand new edition of Collider Ladies Night with Nell Tiger Free, the star of The First Omen. Oh my, you have your work cut out for you with this role. It's a lot and you crush it. You take it to an 11 in a heartbeat and I love it.
Thank you. That's so, so kind. Thank you.
What is the movie you saw, the performance you saw, personal experience you had, you name it, that first made you say to yourself, I absolutely have to be an actor?
You know what? That is a lovely, lovely question. And I don't have a lovely answer for it because acting sort of happened upon me. It wasn't something I sought out initially. I was scouted when I was very young and asked to come and audition for something. I was 11. So my earliest memories of I'm doing this job. So I never really had a moment where I was like, I've seen this and now I have to do it. It just kind of felt like something that had always been a part of my life. And certainly now in a much bigger, much more real way. And I think it's now as I get older that I see, and I'm already in the industry, that I see performances and I go, that has inspired me massively. I remember being really rocked by, I mean, it's a classic, but for a reason, Meryl Streep's performance in Kramer versus Kramer. I remember seeing that and thinking that she felt like such a real person. And I thought that that was such an amazing thing to achieve, to convince people that you are a real person. I just think that that kind of blew my mind. I just thought she was fantastic.
Oh, I've heard Meryl Streep quite a few times to this question. It makes all the sense in the world.
I can imagine it's because she is, in my opinion, the best actor to ever have lived, genuinely. Is Meryl Streep. I really, really believe that.
So you get scouted and you start to do some work. Do you remember the first time where it really clicked in your head that, like, wow, like someone found the right space in this world for me? Like, I belong here and I have to continue doing this craft.
Yeah, I do remember that. I think it was like right from the get-go for me, because I had so much energy as a kid and I was so bored by like regular school and all these things. And I just wasn't, I didn't really ever feel like that enthused or excited about things. I remember that, but I loved to sing was initially the thing that I loved. And so I had all of this energy and I was driving my mother insane. So she just dropped me off at like a Saturday club where I could sing and dance, which I cannot do to this day. And, you know, there was like little drama clubs in it and it was just like fun. And I loved to sing. So I loved to go there. And, when I got scouted, it was like the first time I considered acting, obviously. And I remember doing my first audition, the first audition I can remember, and just thinking, this is the most exciting, interesting, weird world, and I want to stay here. I auditioned for Horrid Henry. And it's my first ever audition, and I got down, rumor has it, to the last seven or something to play one of the kids in Horrid Henry. And I was like, I remember thinking, oh, maybe I could do this. And then I just sort of decided that I was going to.
And then you very much did. I will start to touch on particular titles. Like one of the first big ones, this is a massive project. It's one of the biggest TV shows of all times. It was Game of Thrones. I don't know how much you remember about that experience, but like if you do, what would you say surprised you most about the reality of making a show that is that massive?
I remember, to be honest, the memory is hazy. I was 14, so but I do remember like just thinking that like the expanse of it and the size of it and like the sheer scale of the production. I remember thinking in my head, oh, this must just be what they all look like. I just thought that like every production was gonna have like 800 day players and like horses and stadium filled with people. I was like, this is normal. I'm sure this is just what it's like. And then the biggest shock for me was going on to something after that on a much smaller scale and being like, that there are so many different ways to make a show and make a movie that like, and still now, like even on this movie, I was like, oh, you're using four cameras? I was like, four cameras? And I didn't have to do my own inserts. So I was like, what? I was so excited. So I feel like I'm constantly finding, you know, things that surprise me massively in this industry. But yeah, Game of Thrones was just a lovely, lovely experience. I wasn't on it for too long. You know, I hadn't seen the show before because, you know, I was 14, so I had no business watching the show. And it just was a lovely, lovely experience. It really was.
Here's a big, broad question that kind of builds on what you were just talking about. And the answer to this question might evolve along the way. But of all the shows and the movies that you've made thus far, which would you credit with putting into focus most what you appreciate most in the stories you go on to tell and the types of on-set environments you want to be part of?
Well, this movie, the on-set environment was absolutely flawless. There was such like a kinship and a friendship between everybody, and everybody really wanted to be there. And there was not one actor nor crew member that I had one harsh word with, not once. And, you know, we had Akasha as like the captain of our ship. Like this was her being there. And the director, I find, in my opinion, sets the tone for how the set's going to run and how it's going to feel. And Akasha just set this tone of like patience, kindness, listening to one another, never cruelty, never, you know, It was just the most beautiful, lovely work environment. And I was so happy to go to work every day. And I wanted to hang out with the people I was at work with in my time off. And we did, you know, we spent all of our time together out of choice, which says a lot. It was really, really, really just a beautiful environment to work in.
Doesn't surprise me to hear that about Arkasha, even just in like the limited interview setting. She just like, she's got like a calm and a sincere enthusiasm for what she's working on. And I feel like that, you know, the trickle down effect on a set is a real thing.
She was so enthused, and you're absolutely right. She is completely sincere and genuine, and she has a genuine love and respect for what she does. And that just, it just inspires everybody to come with the same energy, you know? So it was wonderful.
Here's another big question about working with directors then for you, because you've already worked with a number of like really great individuals. I'm thinking like Nick Reffin, M. Night, Arkasha. Do you think that the directing greats have a shared trait that you appreciate, but then also what's something about Arkasha that makes her one of a kind?
Some of them do. Some of them share some things I think are impressive, but what Arkasha has that makes her one of a kind is that, Arkasha has no ego. There's just not, she doesn't have an ego. She doesn't have her own, she's willing to listen to other people in a way that it's not like they're just nodding and waiting for their turn to speak. When you talk to Arkasha, Arkasha's really listening. If you have a concern, Arkasha's concerned about it too. Like, and she made everything collaborative, but she was still very much, you know, in charge and very much, it's like, the best way I can describe it is that genius does not have to be synonymous with madman. It doesn't have to be synonymous with ruling with an iron fist or inciting fear. You don't have to be cruel to people. You don't have to hurt people to have them portray hurt people. You know, it's actually quite the opposite. Arkasha made me feel so held and so safe that I wanted to go a million miles an hour for her. You know, and I've had experiences in the past where in order to get a performance out of me, I've been bullied or harassed or tortured emotionally because that's what I was supposed to be doing in the scene. And it's like, well, we're all capable of doing that without you having to force it upon us. You know, I think Arkasha was the best. Sorry, I'm really going into it here.
Important things to emphasize.
Want to emphasize, and it's important to talk about because it shouldn't be taboo to talk about your negative experiences. You know, I don't think it should be. I think it's important to share those, especially woman to woman. Sometimes it's important to look out for one another. And in this case, Arkasha looked out for everybody.
To build on that a little, I've gotten in the habit of asking this question a lot because I know on a movie and TV sets, it can be really scary sometimes to speak up. Do you remember the first time on set that you felt the power of your own voice where, you know, you had something to say about something, you spoke up, and because you did, someone listened and something changed for the better?
Yeah, I actually remember the exact first time that it happened, and it was in my own defense. Which was a very new experience for me. I was okay sometimes, you know, with the defense of other people, but in my own defense, I was always quite quiet and quite meek. And I was quite young at the time. And there was a scene where I had to be in my bra and the director at the time was like, told me to stay in my bra the entire time and have the crew set up around me while I was in my bra and light the scene around me. And now as a grown woman, even being asked to do that initially, I would say absolutely not. No way. There's no reason for that. But at the time I was like, well, maybe this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And I sat there for around 2 hours and people were coming and going in and out of the room. And I just thought something came over me where I was like, I'm not supposed to be sitting here and I don't need to be sitting here like this for 2 hours. And I quite forcefully said, I'm not going to sit here anymore. And I'm going and I'm putting my top back on and I'll come back when you're ready for me. And it was the first time I ever stood up for myself and I just did. And I got up and I walked out and then I came back. And I don't
think I'm
trying to do anything insidious. I think it was just a disregard that somebody could be really uncomfortable in the situation. And yeah, that was the first time I really stuck up for myself.
One of my favorite things to hear about now more so than ever is just the rise of intimacy coordinators on set and how like it feels like it's almost a given at this point. And the fact that it hadn't been a given for so, so long when so many things could have been fixed far sooner, it blows my mind.
I think it's a wonderful, wonderful addition to the industry, and it's a long overdue one and a very necessary one. Intimate scenes should be choreographed like a dance. Mm-hmm. There should be nothing sexual to them. It's like, you know, it's on our backs to create the chemistry. That's on us. But as far as people feeling safe and feeling comfortable, it's an absolute necessity, and I'm so happy that they're a part of the industry now.
Oh, I could not agree with that more.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, so to lean into the First Omen now, I'll start with Margaret and her backstory. And I know we do learn a good deal about her backstory in the movie, but I tend to be a bit of a nerd about lore and that kind of information. So it was making me wonder, were there any like major life events for her that you came up with on your own that we don't necessarily see or hear about in the film, but we can feel informing your performance?
For me, I didn't. It was all on the page with me for Margaret, and me and Kasia talked about Margaret's upbringing and what her childhood was like. And we get essences and moments of that in the movie and in her performance. But, you know, our childhoods is such a big part of us and we carry them with us. But if for the movie, I wanted to focus on, you know, Margaret now and who she was now from day one when we meet her to where we end up with her and just focus on those parts of her.
Definitely a very full character. The answer to this might be a no, because I don't know if you work like this, but given how much she goes through in the movie, like she's going through in the now a horrific situation. She has past trauma. There's some self-doubt. There's what happens to her in the club scene. Do you have to have an anchor of sorts, something where no matter what she's going through, you can always think back to that thing and kind of ground all of her choices in some sort of consistent truth?
In previous characters, I've had that. I've had something like that. But with Margaret doesn't really have a consistent truth. I think an obvious answer would maybe be her faith, but I don't think that's correct, because I don't think she does ground every choice that she makes in her faith, because I think she's kind of unsure about it. She's kind of falters and wavers, and she's clung to that because it's something that's made her feel like she belongs, but she doesn't necessarily know if she feels it, you know? So Margaret doesn't have a consistent truth because she's been told everything that she believes to be true. Her life is a lie. So, you know, that's why she has this erratic kind of energy, because she doesn't actually have anything to hold on to. I think that was the most important, a really important layer for her, for sure.
It's not easy to sell all those layers and make someone feel whole. And I'm very impressed by how well you do that. I want to get into horror movie acting specifically, because I don't know. I watch things in horror movies and I think to myself, like, someone cannot be in one of those movies unless they're willing to give a totally fearless performance. So more broadly, can you recall the first time that you realized that, I guess, taking risks and swinging big on set was okay to do, whether it was, you know, being inspired by something you saw someone else do or something you tried yourself that confirmed to you, like, yes, I could do this?
Yeah, I think that because I've come from the background of doing Servant for 4 years, and Leanne, there wasn't a lot of wiggle room for things like that, because Leanne is a very specific character. She was like centered and measured and still and the observer. And, you know, so, you know, I couldn't gesticulate or anything with Leanne or anything like that. So I found it really freeing being able to move my hands when I spoke and give like sort of a bit of light and shade to like the physicality of it. And I think I learned quite quickly with Kasia that there wasn't a lot that we weren't willing to try, you know. And we tried a bunch of different things and a bunch of different versions of different things, and
we just had a lot of fun trying to find what felt like too much or what felt like too little, and trying to find that nice middle ground to keep it from being ridiculous and to stop it from being, you know, like something that could be kind of misconstrued as being quite funny. Like, we didn't want it to be that. We wanted it to be really disturbing and really weird and unsettling. So everything we did, we just tried to do the creepiest thing we could possibly imagine.
Oh my God, I have so many follow-up questions. If you feel the need to veer into spoiler territory with any of these, just say the word and we can put up the warning whenever. But because you had the opportunity to swing big and play with Arkasha, can you tell me something that you did, maybe thought to yourself, there's no way they're going to use it, but they did, and now it's in the finished film?
Oh my God, I need to think a lot. See, not a lot of the time, I didn't really have the idea, the thought like, oh, they're never going to use it, because we love the weirder, the better, you know, we really, really did. I remember there was like there was a moment where I'm supposed to be kind of dead looking, and I was like, and ill looking, and like something very bad is happening. And I just thought to myself, what if I smile? So I sort of tried to do it in like this like half dead, like, smile thing, and they used it in the film, and I was like, I can't believe they went with the smiley creepy dead smile face one. But it's always nice to see that when you give something a go and ends up in the film. Also, less dramatically, the trip that Margaret has when she slides down the wall and she falls over, that was just me, that just happened. I just sort of carried on, and that's of course the one that we ended up going with.
Oh my God, I love that. Going back to something else that was in your other answer, the idea of having fun with things, but also making sure that they feel like deeply horrific and scary. Was there any particular scene where it was toughest to like calibrate that tone and make sure you guys were landing where you wanted to?
Yeah, I think for me, I was worried initially about what me and Kasia have now named the Demon Dance, which is like a moment where I crawl out of the wreckage of the car and I become sort of, we can probably put the spoiler thing up.
Wait. I want you to talk about this in full, because that is an unforgettable scene. Spoiler alert for The First Omen. It's so easy. You just pause here, you go see the movie, and then you come back and push play and the conversation continues. So go check it out. Final spoiler warning. That dance.
Yeah, that for me, before, when we were coming up to it, I was worried about my own capability with tackling it. And I was thinking, what if this looks funny? What if it looks silly? What if it, I didn't know if I was going to be able to perform it in a way that made it harrowing and disturbing. You know, I thought that this could so easily veer into the territory of being quite comical and being something quite silly. But again, I know I say all the time, I had Kasia, and the energy changed on set that day. And there was just this moment right before we did it where I thought, I'm not going to swear, but I thought, hell yeah. It's, you know, I can swear. Okay. There was this moment right before we did it. I just thought, fuck yeah, no, this is going to be, we can do this, because everything just kind of felt like the energy of the day. I know this sounds really woo-woo-y, but it just landed like at this moment where everyone was exhausted to the point of like delirium. So we were all kind of in this giddy, weird, delirious headspace. And so it's just one shot, and it was a 6-minute take, and we just did it. And it was a fabulous experience.
Job. Very, very well done. I'm curious now, does Arkasha have a monitor dance? Like something you could see her doing behind the monitor that signals she's really digging a take?
Yes, she absolutely does. Arkasha, you can always tell how like deranged Kasha's feeling depending on the height of her ponytail. So it would like start here, and towards the end of the day, it would be like up here, like seriously on her forehead, like her ponytail. And I'd look over to the monitor, and if I could see it bouncing, like from above the monitor, the ponytail just bouncing violently up and down, I was like, okay, good. And every now and then she would scream from behind the monitor. She'd be like, yes, yeah. And so in those moments, you knew we were getting it right.
All I want to do is go look at like B-roll and behind the scenes images now, yeah, just to see where it's at.
It's there. It's absolutely there. There's one shot. Oh, I probably, there's a shot where if you look really closely, you might be able to see it. She's really hands-on, and sometimes she's holding her monitor and she's in the scene running around fixing things, and you never know, you could spot a little ponytail bobbing along.
That would be the greatest Easter egg ever. looking at the end of the film, now that we have the spoiler warning up, I am curious about your take on this. So when we first meet her in the movie, when she first arrives in Rome, she's really devout in her faith, and she seems to like life. After what she experiences in this movie, do you think that those feelings are long lost, or can she ever regain them?
To be honest, that's not a question I would even know how to answer myself. I think that the way that the story goes and the things that have happened to her in the story would be very understandable if she had lost her faith. But also, you know, faith is a very strong thing. And sometimes even people in situations that you look, it feels like, you know, they would lose it completely. That's when they grip onto it the hardest. But for me, it wasn't actually a color that I was really thinking about right at the end of the film. It was more just about survival and protection. And maybe, you know, later down the line, it would be something that she could explore again. But, you know, it would be a very understandable thing if it deterred her from it.
Just to speak this into existence, should we get another chapter in her story, another chapter in, I'll call it her hero's journey, what is a skill she gains during the first omen that you would like to see her apply to, I guess, making the world a better place in another film?
Well, I mean, she can use a rifle now.
That's a good point.
That's good. She seems to be a very skilled hunter-gatherer by the end of the movie, which is always useful in like an apocalyptic scenario. I think that she's just got this new strength, like this fierce strength. She's also a mother now, so she's going to protect her baby. You know, it's just, she just has this very, after sometimes you've been through the worst things imaginable, it's like you're impenetrable. It's like, you can't get hurt anymore. All these things that seem so scary are all of a sudden trivialized because you're like, well, I've quite literally been to hell and back, and she quite literally had. And now she's made her own sort of utopia, and she's not going to let anything take that away from her. So that would be it.
Nice. I would believe that. I have gotten in the habit of ending every ladies' night with this particular question. I will warn you, nobody likes the question, but I do because I think it's an important thing to think about. I find that nobody in this business says good job to themselves enough. We give each other awards, and that's really cool, but nobody says it to themselves. So can you tell me something specific you do in the first omen that you know you could look back on and say, I am so proud of what I did there?
That's so lovely. That's such a lovely thing. I am really proud of that dance and the dancer. I'm proud of that. It was a hard place to get to, and I was really worried about doing it, and people seem to like it. So I'm proud of myself for that moment.
As you should be. Nell, I'm going to say thank you so much for joining me for Collider Ladies Night. Congratulations on everything you accomplished on the first omen and everything coming your way in the future. You're welcome back to Ladies Night anytime.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.